Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us at Fireside Chicago again. This is your host, Tim Shum. We have a very interesting and special guest today, Jonathan Ellis, who is the founder and managing general partner of his own venture capital firm called Sandolphin Capital. I have a very funny and interesting story about how I met Jonathan dating back to 5 years ago. We start the podcast there. But this is one of the best conversations that I've had that I've really enjoyed, just about the venture capital community in general, angel investors, the different types of capital out there, how we activate different aspects of the capital markets to inject more capital into the tech community, which will lead to more jobs, something I'm very passionate about. So a really interesting conversation. Jonathan is also the founder of Midwest.Tech, which is trying to bridge the gap of not only tech in Chicago, but all across the Midwest, create collaborative platform and environment for people to collaborate in, on capital ideas and growing their technology companies. Without further ado, Jonathan Ellis.
Jonathan, thanks so much for carving out the time. You're a busy guy these days.
Thanks, Tim. Nice to be here.
I really, really appreciate it. So, funny story for the listeners. We met back in 2016 when you were starting Sandolphin Capital. I was out on my own. A lot of the listeners know my story about leaving corporate America. And I had a little co-working space right across from the Merchandise Mart. And Jonathan was nice enough to come my way and meet me. And the office space that I had sat one person. And the conference room was booked. And then Jonathan and I had a nice coffee meeting, basically sitting knee to knee. It was a little bit awkward. I don't know if you remember that at all, but I sure do. And I was like, I got to get some bigger space for sure. But thank you for continuing the relationship after that meeting, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, so this won't really come across on audio or video, but I'm 6'6". So when my knees are knee to knee with you, I mean, my knees are basically in your face.
I was a little intimidated, I must say. You're very nice. You were very nice. It was awesome. So I remember you just starting Sandolphin, and it's grown since then, and your presence in the tech ecosystem has grown since then. But just for the listeners that don't know Jonathan, maybe just take us through your backstory and how you got to venture capital.
Sure. It's a little unusual, I guess. I started off my career in the UK doing middle market investment banking. Got the chance to come to Chicago. I was meant to be in Chicago for 6 months, and 13 and a half years later, I'm still here. I would say be careful what you say yes to, but no regrets. And I spent most of my career prior to Sandolphin doing middle market private equity and debt investing. So we looked at B2B SaaS companies, specialty finance companies, commercial real estate lending. And around 2014, I started getting interested in angel investing. So that included small checks on AngelList. I started doing some checks in Chicago. I used to sneak out of the office to go to pitch events and networking happy hours to sort of get to know more people. And sort of got really pulled into what was happening in the Chicago tech ecosystem. I kept hearing again and again people saying that there wasn't enough early stage capital in Chicago. You know, thought that was kind of crazy. I've come to appreciate, I think, historically, like why that was the case. And wanted to do something about it. I always wanted to start my own company. Didn't have one good idea like some of the founders we back. Had always been an investor, and it just seemed like this was the perfect sort of combination of what I'd done historically, the interest in like the learning curve I was on, and the opportunity. And so we started Sandolphin in 2016.
What you were doing before, my understanding of private equity, real estate investing, especially debt investing, like these are more mature companies than like the angel crowd. What drew you to the angel community and the early stage stuff? Because obviously I would imagine, you have a lot of experience in finance and spreadsheets. It's probably a little bit more risky of an investment. So what drew you there?
Yeah. I mean, I spent my whole career as a generalist. So I was always looking at new businesses and new markets. And my job was to get up to speed, like, know 80% of what an expert knows within a few days, which is usually pretty intense. But I'd sort of seen a lot of things and like knew enough to be dangerous. And then we were typically looking at anything north of sort of 10 or 20 million of EBITDA or cash flow up to, I think my biggest one was like $1.5 billion. And you're looking at historical financials and, KPIs. It's a little bit boring. The business is very mature. It's fairly predictable. You can build, a cash flow forecast out 5 or 10 years and, it's not going to be exact, but what I was finding though was on the private equity side for a few years, had been part of like helping create equity upside and thinking strategically around how to do that. And then I spent a whole bunch of time as a lender where you have capped upside, but you have to really understand the risks. And I was like, okay, this is the early stage stuff is interesting because, you know, you, if you can avoid the like obvious mistakes, the asymmetry of early stage venture, you know, the winners sort of take care of themselves a little bit. But it's just a chance to sort of, you know, parlay what I learned. And then to be honest, my old employer, you know, they did put up with me for 10 years. I like to, I did the analysis, but I often like to go with my gut as well. And early stage, you have to do that. So yeah, we'll look at whatever we can and be as rigorous as we can. But ultimately, you're still making a bit of a gut call on, you know, the opportunity and the entrepreneurs and things like that. So trying to get that balance right. And yeah, to me, the other thing was the middle market world, private equity, and look at the stock market now, you know, that's all very frothy and very competitive. And to me, it's very exciting to be part of the, you know, the ecosystem of capital markets where you're really creating these businesses for everyone else to get excited about, you know, and that the return for the risk, I think, is commensurate.
No doubt. No doubt. Yeah. But when you were first starting out in the early stage space, did you have like a thesis in mind? You mentioned kind of going off gut, like, you know, how were you making decisions then? And then how did that kind of like turn into the thesis for what eventually became Sendolphin Capital?
Yeah. So to begin with, my training wheels was I signed up for AngelList and signed up for a bunch of syndicates, and I could sit doing my day job and getting decks landing in my inbox. So I say you have to look at 100 before you, you know, pick one, because you just don't know what you don't know. And over time, there's definitely things which I sort of had a little bit higher conviction in based on what I learned in the past. I'm like, oh, this is kind of like this business, but earlier stage. You know, I know a little bit about this market. This one makes sense. And then when I was starting Sendolphin, I basically went back. I think I made 30 small angel investments prior to Sendolphin. And I went back and looked at them. I was like, okay, like, what have I been doing? And, you know, categorized them. And I'm like, okay, we've done B2B SaaS. Okay, that makes sense given my background. And then come to appreciate, like, it, regionally, the Chicago and the Midwest is pretty strong in that. They did marketplaces, same. You know, I would have said I didn't like hardware, but then I had done like 5 IoT businesses. And, you know, I think the hardware plus recurring revenue type businesses are interesting as well. And so the first fund was really just, you know, the broad lens of, okay, what do I know from the past? What have I been investing in so far? And what seems to make sense? And then, we kept it pretty flexible. Given my background, I spent a lot of time looking at fintech, which then grew to insurtech and real estate tech or prop tech. That's sort of what I was getting known for. I don't want Sendolphin to be known for that, because we're sort of verticalizing as we sort of grow out the team. But those are the sort of things which sort of aligned with my background the most and some of our early investments. And I, you know, it would be going to like industry conferences and getting to know the specialist funds in that space. But it was, just sort of a loose framework. And then, just trying to refine it over time.
I love it. And you're very well known and respected in Chicago, but you're also, and we'll get into Midwest Tech Connect here in a second, but you were in the UK, you were investing in these companies, it sounds like US-based, Europe, maybe globally. What was it about Chicago that you saw? Maybe some of the characteristics, maybe both positive and constructive in a way.
Yeah, so as a Chicago tech outsider, until maybe 2014, you know, I honestly was getting on with my day job. I had no idea what was really happening here. And then I remember 1871 opening. I lived in River North at the time. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And then I started hearing about some of the early success stories in Chicago. But honestly, it's not very well documented and covered, like just how much has been happening. And, you know, I think 5 years from now, it's going to be very obvious that there's a ton happening in Chicago. But for me, culturally, I love Chicago and the Midwest, right? I'm from a small town in rural England. New York was a bit much for me when I go and visited there. But like, I love the energy, and I love, like, you know, people seem like pretty nice and friendly and collaborative. So like, compared with like the middle market in my former life, where it's very sort of dog eat dog, cutthroat, you know, it felt like a nice place to be. And then, you know, just that intersection of opportunity and you know, I guess my interests, you know, I think for me to have quit my job and moved to the Bay Area and become a VC, that would make no sense. But Chicago is like, okay, this is still an emerging opportunity. And the coastal funds, the more established ones, are definitely paying attention to the Series A and beyond, but this sort of pre-seed and seed layer where we like to play. you know, it wasn't well served. And so I'm like, okay, like, let's, you know, lean in here. And, you know, I think people roll their eyes a little bit about how much sort of Midwest investors are revenue oriented. But like, I think that sort of, again, with my former lender mindset on, like, understanding like where the revenue is going to come from, you know, does help. You know, we've invested pre-revenue and certainly, you know, earlier than many. But, you know, I think the kind of businesses that are being built here are sort of, you know, pretty real robust businesses, like, not sort of...
I would say revenue is probably a pretty important variable. I'm not putting myself in your shoes, but, you know, revenue or future revenue or predicting future
revenue. I think
so. Yeah.
It's not the only way to make money. I mean, I say, like, I'm not really a tech investor. I don't invest in pure technology, right? I'm investing in, like, tech-enabled businesses. Mm. And, you know, that doesn't sound as interesting, but, like, really that's what most investors are doing here, I think.
I love it. Well said. Now, talk to me a little bit about, we've talked about this, but just give you an opportunity to talk to our audience. Talk about Midwest Tech and Midwest Tech Connect and the need that you saw, maybe some of the pain points, maybe, and probably more importantly, the opportunity that you saw in the Midwest.
Sure. So Midwest.Tech was born last summer, and it was, again, a few things coming together. I spent a bunch of time the last few years doing laps in the Midwest. So I used to show up at any major event anywhere in the Midwest where there was a bunch of startups or investors getting together, like, I would try and show up there. And, you know, came to appreciate, like, lots of great things happening, but mostly focused at sort of the city or state level. And then as COVID hit, you know, travel stopped. I think wanted to remain connected with everyone, even though I perhaps wasn't showing up as much. And, you know, people getting comfortable with doing the Zoom videos, some of the emerging sort of virtual tech, virtual event sort of tech platforms, kind of created an opportunity where I'm like, okay, now we can actually bring everyone together in one place. I'm a big believer that, you know, the Midwest region as a whole is actually pretty strong, but it's, you know, lots of independent silos often. And I'm trying to create, and I'm not the only person doing this, but trying to create more connective tissue. And so Midwest Tech Connect was born. That was an event we launched in July, took place in September. It was a pilot event. We had a team of two on it. It was pretty scrappy. We were building the plane while we were flying it. But we had 850 startups sign up, 280 investors. Through our platform, we had 3,300 connections made. Some of those we think, you know, did turn into investments. No one wants to tell us that, though, but definitely some familiar names getting funded. And we're like, okay, this is a success. We'll do it again. We sort of look at the feedback, pretty good feedback, but everyone's like, okay, you know, it would be great if you did X, Y, and Z. So we went looking for a different platform, and then we just launched that again a couple of weeks ago. And we've got, I think, 700 plus people signed up as of time of recording. And yeah, really excited to again, bring everyone in one place. And that's probably the crux of Midwest.Tech right now is this Midwest Tech Connect event, but we've also been trying to activate more angels in the region. We're trying to connect entrepreneur support organizations, whether those are public, private, or nonprofits. We did a regional summit on tech sector economic development in December. Didn't make a big splash about that, but we had 100 folks come and 30 presenters basically talking about what was happening in their cities and states and really sharing challenges and ideas they had around sort of, you know, capital, talent, and innovation. So again, different multiple layers of connective tissue we're trying to build.
It's so interesting, and I love just talking about, you know, we talk a lot about on the show, hey, Silicon Valley's 20 years ahead of us, and, you know, what does that mean? Well, they've had an ecosystem that's been around since, like, arguably the 60s, you know, and that's kind of morphed into stuff over time. There's a lot of Lucas James Talent Partners. There's probably some version of Midwest.Tech that's for Silicon Valley. But I think you're right. Like, you know, Chicago as an ecosystem has grown, and you could argue since 2014 over the past 6 or 7 years, pretty substantially. You might have Indianapolis have their own little thing. You might have the University of Wisconsin-Madison have their own little thing. You have some angels that operate at a University of Illinois. But yeah, if we're not all talking together and supporting each other and sharing ideas and networks and vendors, and, you know, it's just going to continue to operate in silos. And I thought that was really interesting. And I think you're at the forefront of that. It is a little bit of the wild, wild west, and, you know, up to folks like you to come up with ideas like that. I think that's great.
Everyone's trying to solve the same problems, you know, and everyone's trying to get investors to come and, you know, come to their particular city or state, and, you know, and it's working. And like, we were exactly doing just that. But, you know, the critical mass, if you can get everyone in one place, then everyone will show up. It's like, it's almost like a marketplace instead of an event. And I'm bullish. Same with talent, you know, trying to, you know, any individual city trying to, you know, convince people to move from the Bay Area there. Like, you know, again, it happens, it works. But I think if the Midwest region sells itself, it's, you know, geographically contiguous, it's culturally homogenous. I think not completely homogenous. There's definitely some differences. But, you know, I think if you make the region attractive, then people, you know, will come back and start thinking, okay, well, you know, I have family there. And if it doesn't work out there, then maybe I can move to this city. And, you know, I think I'd like to reframe things a little bit regionally versus, you know, people talk about the Bay Area. Right, it's not in individual cities.
That's true.
Within the Bay Area. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. I love it. Talk to me about, especially a guy coming from traditional investing platforms, private equity, real estate, stuff like that. Because that's been around for so long, that's kind of where the money goes, and the money goes into mutual funds and 401ks and the stock market. Talk to me about like the importance of activating angels and getting some capital from maybe some of the other areas to look at this early stage space and the importance behind that.
Yeah. Gosh, we were talking about this on Clubhouse recently. I think it's a huge untapped opportunity for Chicago. Now, again, before my time, I think maybe 10 or 20 years ago, there were a whole bunch of people that did put money into a wave of venture funds. And it was like, just, you know, I think dot-com bust or whatever, like a whole bunch of people lost a bunch of money. So I can appreciate why people are now a little hesitant to get involved there. From my experience, again, coming from outside the sort of Chicago tech bubble and in coming into it, my LPs initially were a lot of my former colleagues or folks I'd met, you know, so bankers, lenders, lawyers, real estate folks. Now we're sort of increasing more, you know, tech operators and, you know, former entrepreneurs, like, so we're diversifying our LP base. But a lot of people had no idea. Never thought about venture capital, never thought about angel investing, had no idea what's happening in Chicago. So I'm like educating them. And I think everyone assumes that like when you're fundraising for a fund in Chicago, you know, everyone's talking to the same people. But actually there's a whole bunch of folks that are really just not aware. Like the traditional media is not covering it. You know, occasionally a story will hit Wall Street Journal. You know, John Pletz at Cranes does a good job covering like the big Chicago tech stories, but like there should be like multiple stories every day in every local and regional and national media about what's happening in Chicago, because then people will start to like take it seriously and pay attention. So I think it's a huge untapped opportunity to activate these folks who can write, you know, there are a lot of folks who are accredited investors. They could write 5K checks, 10K checks, 25K checks, and really activate this sort of, you know, especially pre-seed, or, you know, make it easier for funds to, you know, raise in the region. So like those are like the, I think, a big opportunity. And I think it's incumbent on everyone to really sort of keep yelling like what's happening, you know, in the space.
I also think it's a little intimidating if you're not part of the space or you don't know a guy like Jonathan or a friend that's doing it. And it's like, mm-hmm. if you're used to other avenues for investment, like I remember like, what do you do? You know, how do you go find a deal? Like, yeah, unless you know somebody or you're part of a group or something like that. It's very, like, it's an illiquid investment, but at the same time, the visibility into how to even like enter the space, like there's gotta be some easy walls that could be dropped. And I know there's like, you know, government regulations about accredited investors and maybe taking that away in the future to open up platforms for stuff like this that aren't as present now. But, you know, I'm a talent guy, but I'm a Chicago guy. I was raised here. I'm not going to move here. The importance of the tech ecosystem growing, not because of making people millionaires and stuff, but to provide jobs and, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, software salaries and account executive salaries, like feed into the restaurants, they feed into the housing market, they feed into other things, they feed into the service economy and other professional services companies on the outset. Like, it is so important to like drive the technology scene from that. And what I'm hearing from you, it kind of all starts with what we're talking about, to like just kind of get some capital kind of going and get that engine going to get these companies to that next level. So they are producing revenue and they can become self-sustaining or they get acquired.
I'd agree with that. I mean, people talk a lot about sort of Chicago's fiscal health. Like, you know, everyone's like, oh, the tax. Like, we can grow our way out of the hole a little bit, maybe not fully, you know. And to do that, we've got to grow the tech sector. That's going to be the growth driver for the economy. You know, it's already here. We just need to keep pouring fuel on the fire. And yeah, I think, you know, it's easy to say, well, taxes, but yeah, put some capital at risk and, you know, let's grow some jobs.
And yeah, it's still crazy to me that there's so many barriers of education and, you know, like, where do I go if I want to invest in the sector without like losing all my money kind of deal? Like, I think there's a huge opportunity there for you that you've identified.
Well, yeah, so funny you mentioned that. So again, coming out of some conversations recently, Chris Deutsch from Lofty Ventures and I and a few other VCs, we're trying to put together Ezra Goldston at Starting Line, Jeff Eschbach from Chicago Early, Samara Hernandez at Chingona Ventures, Sonia Nagar, Community VC, Troy Hennikoff at MAP. We're all now behind the scenes working on trying to activate these angels we talked about. So we're going to, we're very aware. We don't want to start another angel group. There are angel groups out there. We want people to be aware of them and join them if they're interested. There are folks that are doing syndicates. And then there are folks like yourself that do individual angel investing. So, you know, wouldn't it be good for the founders if everyone knew how to find all those people? So, you know, what form this will take, you know, TBD. We're starting with like a boot camp to help, you know, onboard folks into angel investing that are interested. Hopefully that starts a bit of a flywheel where they bring in others. And then for me, if a company's too early, you know, and we do pre-seed, but if it's really more like angel stage, instead of referring it to the same, you know, two or three angel investors that pop into my head every time, if I can refer it into a pool of people, you know, again, got to be wary of like legal risks around this, but you know, like a lot of this is referral based. That's how these companies raise capital, you know? So how can we create the pool and help people find that pool? Cause I think if we can do that, then there's more capital available. And also just the months that it takes founders to network one or two intros at a time, rounding up 10 to 25K checks or 50K checks at a time. We have to change that to really like ignite things.
I was just thinking that, like, think about like if you want to find a opportunity that's a huge pain point that you could provide value to, like think about a founder that they're what they should be doing 100% of their time is finding new customers, training team members, like finding their next employee. And I'll talk to a founder and they're like, all right, like I'll talk to you in 6 months. I got to go on like a roadshow and travel around the country. And, you know, thank God there's Zoom now and people are writing checks off Zoom, but that's a huge pain point. Like it shuts businesses down and they become super stressed. And then on the flip side, like they got to be good and they got to be investable and stuff like that. But like there's money for everybody and it's a matchmaking kind of thing that's just broken right now. I think you're spot on.
Yeah, we've got to grow the capital base, but also, yeah, reduce that time. Because as you say, if a company is burning 10, 20, 50K a month as they're fundraising, like, you know, the money that is being raised or the money that is being circled is just getting absorbed by that. So if we can, you know, now the other end of the spectrum is sort of Silicon Valley mania where, you know, you can walk into a coffee shop supposedly and, you know, like raise $1 million. Like, I'm not like, that's great if you're a founder. Like, I'm like, that seems pretty reckless and wild to me. And I think, you know, it can work out, but a bunch of people can lose a lot of money. And that almost is like, you know, I think it's a happy medium where we make it easier for people to find each other. We find more people faster and we have more risk appetite. And I think that will get us really far.
It's interesting to hear you say that you, and I'm not surprised by this because I know a lot of the other VCs that you mentioned, but everyone's pretty friendly with each other. They kind of work together in some context. Like, how would you categorize like the VC community in Chicago? Because my competitors, like, we'll have a friendly chat every once in a while, but we're still competitors at the end of the day. How would you categorize your relationship with everyone else in town?
I think it's really collaborative. You know, it's big enough now that I don't know every VC in town. You know, I try to know at least one person at every VC in town. But yeah, I think at an early stage, like most funds don't try and do the whole round. You know, even at the extreme end, there's a couple of funds that try and have like a 20% ownership target. And so if the founders are raising $1 million at 4 million pre or 20 at six, you know, like they'll do pretty much the whole round. But for the most part, even those folks will probably let in a couple of co-investors. So even the ones that you think will do the whole round, like when it's, so most people though, I wish I had better stats on this. I think it's maybe at the low end three, but usually like, you know, 5 to 10 funds are in every deal at a very early stage, right? Everyone's sort of trying to take a portfolio approach. And I think that's really good for the founders as well, because then you're getting multiple points of view in terms of expertise, LP bases and advisor bases to help people out with like connections or advice, follow-on capital sources, both within the funds and then their own sort of networks. So like, I think that's really healthy. And so, you know, you have to collaborate with everyone because, you know, we're all going to, I mean, I'm co-invested with tons of funds now, and like, we're all in this together. Like, as much as like, there might be one deal that's like really hot that perhaps I don't get in on, there'll be another one. And, you know, again, if you take the long view, every other fund success or every other, you know, a company that I don't get in, that's going to be good for Chicago. And those people are going to go off and start other companies. And like, you know, it's a very different mindset. It is like the rising tide lift all boats kind of analogy, but you know, it is more like that, I think.
I think that's great. Anybody that we have on the show is so pro Chicago, and it's, you know, obviously they're doing what they need to do for wherever they're spending, you know, their Monday through Friday. But, you know, the general theme is like, hey, let's get Chicago up and running. We want to be competitive. We don't want to lose talent to the coasts. Mm-hmm. I just think it's great to see that collaboration across the board. Mm-hmm. Switching gears a little bit. So a lot of our listeners are aspiring founders. Maybe they're doing sales now and they're coming up with an idea. Like their current founders, they just started their company. Maybe they're at a later stage. But for the aspiring folks that maybe don't understand like why you need capital at the early stages and, you know, why you can't, like my business doesn't need capital. It's a services business. It just kind of started with Tim and that was fine. But where does venture capital come in to the mix? Why is it valuable? And then you mentioned some aspects of the relationship capital that's there too.
Yeah, like not every tech company needs to raise capital, you know, and when I tell founders that they shouldn't raise VC money, they look at me funny. But, you know, I think it's a tool and it creates certain expectations in terms of, you know, where you should get to with the tool. There's a whole ecosystem of folks that are bootstrap SaaS founders, right? So you can do it without it, but it's a tool. Okay, so what is it a tool for? To me, I bucket it into two, right? So it's either R&D. So you're either, you know, spending a lot of money upfront or like ahead of the next, you know, year or two's technical demands. And, you know, for a real tech company, I really think that's core. And on the B2B side, sales and marketing. And on the consumer side, you know, typically marketing, right? So once you found something that's working, you know, they say like, you know, don't raise venture capital until you don't need it. But if your unit economics are good or seem like they will be good, and you can sort of prove out that, you know, early on, then, you know, if for every dollar you're investing in sales and marketing, you're generating some multiple of that, you know, through customer lifetime value, then raising some money now and, you know, giving up 10, 20, 30% of your business to accelerate that. It was great, you know, because that you're just accelerating the compounding of the cash flows in the business, like purely economically. And so, you know, there's obviously other uses, you know, in fintech, there's regulatory upfront hurdles to overcome or security. There's certain specific things, but really it's R&D or sales and marketing. Those are the main levers. And, you know, I think early on, folks will assess what you've done with little to no capital, but it's more about, okay, if you've done that with no capital, you know, what can you do with capital to accelerate? The other thing is how aggressive the founders want to be. You know, sometimes you can bootstrap your way, and some people are very ingenious at bootstrapping. And if you can get all your customers prepaying annually, you know, and things like that, then that's lots of great cash flow in the business up front. Or if you can pre-sell customers to fund development, that's another trick that I see people do. Yeah, that's great. You know, it's really a matter then of, you know, how aggressively you want to attack the market. You know, do you want to grind it out and, you know, you're going to be at this 10 to 20 years, or do you want to sort of really invest in sort of getting the product different and better than everyone else as fast as possible, and you know, winning market share. You know, and some people, they can have a lifestyle business that kicks off cash, and that's great. And some people can bootstrap a business beyond just a, you know, lifestyle business. I hate that phrase, but it's sort of the cash flowing one that doesn't have other investors expecting an exit. But yeah, as I say, it's a tool.
We have a board advisor in our business, Jeff, and he had started a company in my space, recruiting firm, scaled it up over 20 years, you know, no investors or anything like that. But one thing he said to me that really stuck, that I think correlates to a lot of tech companies, is he's like, Tim, you have to get like a core group of just salespeople. Like, you could hire one, but if you can get three or four, building a community, some camaraderie, like, and then getting the word out about what you're doing, pick your head up 2 years later and then see where you're at versus trying to do it yourself. And I think it's like what you're talking about in tech on steroids a little bit. Cause like you and I see these companies that are just like, hey, they met with Jonathan 2 years ago and like now they're at 150 people. It's like, that actually happens. And there's some magic there if you can execute that right to get R&D going, get the engineering team, get a good CTO in place, get your marketing rocking and rolling, get that sales engine rocking and rolling, get some good back office support. Customer success is taking care of customers.
Yeah.
And if you have an opportunity to do that, and that's your plan and you're cool with it, to your point, that's a lot where the magic happens. And I think that's what everyone's looking for and what you're searching for.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I really enjoyed catching up with you. I know it's been a little bit, and yeah. I'm so excited for you with everything that you got going on at Sendolphin and Midwest.Tech. You have a Midwest.Tech Connect event coming up, depending on when this airs. But if anyone wanted to find you, find Sendolphin, or learn a little bit more about Midwest.Tech, where can they find you?
Sure. So Sendolphin's website is sendolphincapital.com. You can find all about Midwest.Tech, Midwest Tech Connect, and Midwest.Tech. We invested in that domain name. You can find me on LinkedIn, Jonathan Ellis. Follow us on social at midwest.tech or send out from CAP. Our DMs are open. We're pretty accessible.
Awesome, Jonathan. Thanks so much for the time. I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
I hope everybody enjoyed that conversation with Jonathan Ellis. If you're new to the podcast, make sure you hit the subscribe button. We try to get a new show out every week, if we can, sometimes every other week, but we are fully dedicated to getting on as many founders and CEOs and venture capital folks and private equity folks in and around the Chicago business community. If you have a suggestion for a potential guest, please reach out to me. My email is tim@lucasjamestalent.com. Again, tim@lucasjamestalent.com. Always looking for really, really interesting new guests. So feel free to reach out to us there. And again, if you haven't, hit that subscribe button for future shows.